From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. This week, all eyes on Iowa. 3 days until the caucuses, the GOP debate without Trump, Clinton and Sanders neck and neck. Megyn Kelly was there. Trump wasn't. Ted Cruz started the GOP debate with a barbed joke.
I'm a maniac, and everyone on this stage is stupid, fat, and ugly. And Ben, you're a terrible surgeon. Now that we've gotten the Donald Trump portion out of the way.
Hillary Clinton says she's a fighter, but it was Bernie Sanders on the offensive this week attacking Clinton.
It is great to be against the war after you vote for the war. It is great to be for gay rights after you insult the entire gay community by supporting DOMA.
And the Zika virus has everyone's attention. Margaret Chan, Director General of the World Health Organization, sees explosive growth, and we've all seen the birth defects.
The level of alarm is extremely high.
This hour on Point, our weekly news roundtable with Jennifer Jacobs of the Des Moines Register, Lisa Desjardins of the PBS NewsHour, and On Point news analyst Jack Beatty. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on who's winning your support and what will we do about Zika. Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining us from Des Moines, Iowa, is Jennifer Jacobs, chief political reporter for the Des Moines Register, right in the thick of it. Jennifer Jacobs, welcome to On Point. It's great to have you this week.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Great to have you. And from Washington, Lisa Desjardins joins us, political director at the PBS NewsHour. Lisa, welcome to the Rumble.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Jennifer and Jack.
And from Hanover, New Hampshire, Jack Beatty joins us. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom, Jennifer, and Lisa.
So here was the windup for the debate last night. Trump saying, no, I don't like the way I'm treated by Fox.
I was not treated well by Fox. They came out with this ridiculous PR statement. It was like drawn up by a child, and it was a taunt. And I said, you know, how much of this do you take? I have zero respect for Megyn Kelly. I don't think she's very good at what she does. I think she's highly overrated.
So he wasn't there, raising money for vets down the streets. And Ted Cruz, you heard the joke at the top of the show. Here's another time he tried it. Not so much applause this time. One more mean question. He was under pressure here, but still kind of mimicking, mocking Trump in absentia.
Gosh, if you guys say ask one more mean question, I may have to leave the stage. The most important determination any voter is going to make in this election is who's best prepared to be commander in chief, who has the experience, who has the knowledge, who has the judgment, who has the clarity of vision and strength of resolve to keep this country safe.
Jennifer Jacobs, chief political reporter for the Des Moines Register. This was right on your turf. What did you see last night, and how do things look as the GOP and the Democrats zoom now toward the Iowa caucuses?
Well, I don't think that very many people in the audience missed Trump. We got a lot of response about people saying this debate seemed to have a lot more focus on the issues.
It did.
But it left, you know, the one person who inherited that center stage spot in Trump's absence was Ted Cruz. And he really, like you said, it was high pressure for him. And it just wasn't really his audience. The Republicans that I talked to thought his jokes fell flat. And without that audience support, it was almost, you know, like a sitcom without a laugh track. It just, people were not responding to him, and it left the impression that he just wasn't doing very well. So that was interesting. You know, the Iowans thought that Jeb Bush got hot. They thought that Chris Christie was landing some strong punches. They thought that Marco Rubio ran around a lot and exuded a lot of energy, you know, but was good. Some thought he seemed tense. And the other three seem to just fade a little bit from the stage.
Jeb Bush got hot. I have to just sit back and ponder and savor that sentence for a minute. That's a sentence we haven't heard the whole night. Marco Rubio under pressure. Both Cruz and Rubio under pressure from videos showing different positions they've taken on immigration over the years. The Fox video was pretty brutal on that. Rubio jumped right in, tried to pin it on Cruz here.
This is the lie that Ted's campaign is built on, and he's the most conservative guy, and everyone else is a rhino. The truth is, Ted, throughout this campaign, you've been willing to say or do anything in order to get votes.
Lisa Desjardins, you've been watching this whole campaign. Now, here we are almost on the eve of the caucuses. What's the scene you see on the GOP side of the ledger here? Was it affected by what we saw last night?
I think that excuse me, that was a perfect line to show. Rubio, I think, did land a punch there on Ted Cruz, who is trying to say, hey, I'm the real conservative, and I also have experience, unlike Donald Trump. Here, Rubio is making the argument that the rest of the field has been dying to make, and he made it very succinctly, which is to say, you're not the only one who's conservative, and we're not even sure you are a real conservative, which is why that back and forth over immigration was so important, brought in Jeb Bush. And you know what's so fascinating about that, Tom, is that the truth is, at this point, there isn't a huge amount of difference in the field about immigration. The truth is, we're not clear on exactly what kind of legal status these candidates would want, but most of them are in favor of some legal status for the undocumented, of course, after the border is secure. But the question got to, what did you used to believe? And most of them used to be in favor of a path to citizenship. So this was an area that Marco Rubio did a good job of kind of trying to turn the spotlight again and again from his own record, which has probably been his biggest problem in the campaign, is his immigration record, onto his rivals. And I think that Rubio probably did gain last night at a very important moment for him.
And Jeb Bush got hot. Let's listen to a little of that. Here's Rubio talking. He under pressure also, like Cruz, on his own past and consistency here. And then Jeb Bush chiming in.
We are not going to round up and deport 12 million people, but we're not going to go around handing out citizenship cards either. We will see what the American people are willing to support, but it will not be unconstitutional executive orders like the ones Barack Obama has forced on.
Governor Bush, do you agree that Senator Rubio has not reversed himself on his immigration promise?
Well, I'm kind of confused because he was the sponsor of the Gang of Eight bill that did require a bunch of thresholds, but it ultimately allowed for citizenship over an extended period of time. And then he cut and run because it wasn't popular amongst conservatives, I guess.
Jack Beatty, it was remarkable how different it was when you didn't have Donald pulling all of his funny rubber face faces,
right,
and diving in with his kind of saber attacks on people, his slashing, often vulgar attacks. There was a different tone to it. It harkened back to more familiar presidential debates, and yet and still, he was winning or losing, you tell us, Jack, by not being there. And what about this field as we get to actual votes now? Not just rhetoric and talk and opinion polls, but caucusing.
Well, you know, Tom, running away from that meanie, Megyn Kelly, that might not hurt Trump in the GOP primary. His appeal to white male status anxiety, that really remains potent. But in the general election, Trump's, what to call it, apparent misogyny would galvanize an uninspired Clinton campaign. Consider the material, the teams in the record on say, Trump's fixation on women's bodily function, in Trump's use of slurs like bimbo, in Trump's recent tweet, and I quote, "If Hillary can't satisfy her husband, what makes her think she can satisfy America?" End quote.
Whoa, wow.
Experts say the 2016 GOP nominee has got to exceed Mitt Romney's 44% of the female vote to win the election. Trump would likely fall well short of that, matched against Clinton's crusade to really vindicate the dignity of women.
Jennifer Jacobs, so here we are. I mean, it's going to be the real deal soon. And honestly, I do not understand, maybe you have a feeling, for whether poll numbers, opinion poll numbers, even though they're of potential or likely caucus goers, do they historically reflect actual caucus outcomes? Trump leads, and he leads by a pretty healthy margin that's grown in Iowa in surveys at this point, this week. But are people saying, well, no, he's got Iowa, or is it an open question?
It's an open question. The Des Moines Register and Bloomberg Politics will be releasing our freshest poll on Saturday evening, and we'll know better what the state of the race is here in Iowa. But I don't think there's anyone who can tell you right now who's going to win Iowa, what the order is of the top three. It's one of the most exciting races that we've had in a long time.
Your newspaper has endorsed Marco Rubio and Hillary Clinton. Now, you're a reporter, not an editorial writer, but what was the rationale your paper gave for those, Jennifer?
You know what? I did not read either editorial.
Oh, you're really an objective eye.
I want them to color my reporting.
That's amazing. Wow, the Chinese wall is very thick there at the Des Moines Register. Lisa, what about Jack's point on women?
Right.
And Trump. I mean, it's some pretty outrageous stuff that he's got out there.
Right, and it continues. Bimbo, just yesterday, Hillary Clinton, Jack's right. What's amazing is that it hasn't tarnished him at all in the Republican race. He seems to be sort of untouchable, but I think that's true. I think as time goes on in the general election, that could very well be a problem for Trump. Well, I know we'll talk a little bit about Democrats probably later, but I want to mention the women vote is also a big issue for Hillary Clinton. The young women vote. Older women vote for Hillary Clinton. Younger women right now are voting for Bernie Sanders, and she needs them in this primary. They feel confident about the general, but it's not just an issue for Trump in the general. It's an issue for Hillary Clinton now in the primary.
Big tussle on that side of the ledger as well. Paul in Story City, Iowa. Paul, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Yes, hi, Tom.
Hi.
To me, I think the Republicans have created their own monster in Donald Trump. You know, for years they've had this network of screaming radio talk show hosts who are really stirring up the anger of particularly older white men who really think they're losing their power. And when I saw Donald Trump and Sarah Palin together, I thought I was watching Saturday Night Live. You remember, John McCain's campaign was lacking enthusiasm and big crowds, so as I remember it, he did what you'd do if your five-year-old's birthday party were flagging. He hired a clown. This is a comedic tragedy here, what's going on in the Republican Party, because I'm sure the establishment is really shook up by Donald Trump, and deservedly so.
Paul, our time is short before the break. Lisa, how about it? A comedic tragedy. We know, we talked just this week with the editor of the National Review who've come out with their big Against Trump cover. You've got William Kristol, more mainline conservative, asking if the consequence of the debate last night could be to begin the deflation of the Trump balloon. That he wasn't there, it was more sober, maybe more presidential sounding. Does that matter to the Donald?
No, I don't think it matters to him at all. He had a win-win-win. I don't think he enjoys these debates because he doesn't get to talk the whole time. I also think he's the front runner. Traditional wisdom is you stay out of the debates when you are. I do think, as Paul is pointing out, that this is a real question of American identity, this election. Also, by the way, Paul sounds like he's got the voice of a potential radio host himself. That's a pretty great voice.
He does. Paul, get in the game, baby. Thank you for calling. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at a week in the news, all eyes on Iowa, politics all over, arrests, a death in Oregon, Zika alarm, very widespread now. Jennifer Jacobs is with us, chief political reporter for the Des Moines Register. She's right there in the cockpit in Iowa. The caucuses coming up right as next week dawns. Lisa Desjardins is with us from the PBS NewsHour. Jack Beatty's here. You can join us. What do you think? Did Trump win or lose by taking a pass last night? Who's credible to you on that GOP stage? Who's strong? Who's presidential? And what about the Democrats? Why is Hillary sort of struggling right now? Why is Sanders gaining strength? Iowa caucusers in particular, what's your plan for next week? Chris Christie last night, hearing all the back and forth of the senators going on about who voted for what when and said what when, happy to come in like the outsider.
This is why you need to send someone from outside of Washington to Washington. I feel like I need a Washington to English dictionary converter, right? I mean, stop the Washington bull and let's get things done.
All right, we've got to get to the Democrats, but a little more on the Republicans. Sam in Belmont, Massachusetts. You're on the air, Sam.
Yeah, hi. I think Trump did a masterful stroke. Not only did he draw attention to himself, but he also came out as a champion against the media, even the news. If his voters actually turn out, which is still questionable, he probably will win the caucus, which is great news for Hillary because Trump is unelectable. Bernie, I really like, but he will fade because people will begin to realize that all his programs will never get past the Republican House. He does not have the foreign policy experience that Hillary does. And despite Hillary's negatives, which there are negatives for sure, she will be the first woman president. She is eminently qualified, and we get two presidents for the price of one, so I think she'll take it.
Sam, you're running the table with your views there. You've got it all covered. Let me get one more, and I'll take it to my panel, John in Clawson, Michigan. John, you're on the air.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. I just want to say that Trump won the debate before the debate even started yesterday. There was an interview he did with Breanne Keeler, minutes before the debate, or maybe a little bit earlier than that.
Yep.
And he indicated that Roger Ailes had called him three times, apologized. They had a very nice discussion and invited him to come do the debate. And Trump said that he would have actually considered doing it, except that his event had taken off so well, it had taken on a life of its own, and he couldn't back out of it now.
Yeah,
and
right,
the
right,
of the
right.
Screen, they were running a banner that said Fox apologizes to Trump.
Well, he owns that screen, so he can put whatever he wants on the banner. Somehow, I doubt there was a sweet conversation between Roger Ailes and Donald Trump. Here he was at his vets event last night.
It's for our vets, and you're going to like it because we raised over $5 million in one day. Over $5 million.
Okay, let's just sit back and look at this field. Lisa, what do you see at this point? I mean, we see the polls. We see how this is playing. Nobody can predict, but what do you see unfolding? You're our experienced voice of wisdom.
Well, I'm going to stick to sort of Jennifer's wisdom as well that, you know, really we don't know what's going to happen in Iowa yet. We don't. I think the Iowa poll coming out this weekend from her paper will be a big deal. But I think what's happened in the last 2 weeks that is very important is a lot of people who still were not taking Trump seriously, who said he can never be the nominee, he'll never be president, are sort of stopping in their tracks and saying, wait a minute, this might really happen. And I think to many people's surprise, I think Trump is sort of gaining some independents rather than losing them now. I don't know what effect the debate will have last night, but I do think it appeals to the people who like Trump because he's showing he's a rule breaker in a good way. He's a person who will not just say he's going to change Washington. He's going to do something unexpected and change Washington. To his opponents, they say that's very dangerous. He's acting on emotion. He's not acting on substance. So I think that the Trump, I don't see him fading yet. I do think farther ahead, there might be some issues. I think if you look down, what I'm watching for is New Hampshire, and I'm watching to see who outside of Trump and Cruz becomes that next person, who sort of represents the establishment. I hate to say that because you really are just looking for a different conservative model there. And it seems like John Kasich has been making some inroads there, and same with Chris Christie. Jeb Bush also may do better than we expect in New Hampshire. They're not out of this yet, but they need a big moment in New Hampshire, one of them, to really make their case. I also think overall, guys, it looks like we're going to be here a while.
Yeah.
It looks like we have a real race here.
Jack, do you think that the sort of Macy's Day parade of the Trump campaign, the giant balloons and the hoo-ha, is one and the same with what Americans are really ready, practically on the ground, to do when it comes to checking a box or voting or caucusing?
I can't believe it, Tom. But then I've been wrong about this from the beginning. When he made his announcement, I thought, well, this is ludicrous. I mean, have the Mexicans build a wall? I mean, no one's going to believe that. And I'm completely wrong. I've been wrong on every single thing that I thought would hurt him. The John McCain slur. I thought, that's the end. No. So he's found something. He's voicing something. And I think the caller earlier—
Look, you and a lot of others, Jack, you were talking with Rich Lowry this week on the right. A lot of Republicans felt the same way. I have to say, I didn't. There is so much deep unease in this country.
Yeah.
You can feel people reaching for, as Lisa says, that thing, that magic, unexpected thing. He'll do something, that kind of hope.
Yes, yes. And he speaks for that aggrievement, the sense that the system just isn't working for us. And, you know, it's partly economic. The Wall Street Journal this week had a profile of a couple they call typical of Trump supporters. They had a hard patch. They lived in a trailer for a bit to save money for their homes. Husband had lost his job. The wife was having to work extra time. So they were squeezed economically. And they also felt that sort of betrayed by Obama's America. In fact, at one point, the woman said, I'm getting a gun to defend myself against, quote, Obama's people. Well, that's the element.
Whatever
of
that
the,
means, they're not heavily
that
armed,
means.
I think.
Yes. you know, but that's where the economic anxiety sort of edges into a cultural xenophobic racial anxiety. And whatever it is, it's a potent brew, and he's found a way into it.
Jennifer, do you see some kind of truth-telling behind or within Donald Trump's bombast?
yes, people do think that he could be some sort of, you know, modern day Daddy Warbucks where he really just takes care of people. He has talked about health care for all. He's been vague about that, but he has said, I really do want to take care of everybody. He makes Republicans here believe that he really can help their wages increase. He can create jobs. He's going to shut down the border so that immigrants aren't coming in and causing economic problems. He's going to, you know, hammer out these trade deals. They really do think he will change the economy around.
And he's called out the money influence in our politics, even though he's a billionaire. He's called it out as plainly as anybody anywhere, as plain as Bernie Sanders.
And his supporters believe that. You know, I'll mention there were some interesting interactions during the commercial breaks during the debate last night that parallel what the, you know, the take homes were for the race right now. And that was, there was no Trump, obviously, and not a lot of people were talking about him in the audience. And then they saw Ted Cruz at one point during the commercial breaks approach the moderators and seem tense and under pressure and then seemed to stomp away. And then Marco Rubio's wife was sitting in the front row and he kept coming down to talk to her. And there seemed to be a little bit of tension there.
Talking to his own wife there?
Talking to his wife and she was giving him some advice and he was kind of giving her the stink eye a couple times.
Oh, man.
So there was some tension.
What do you mean I'm screwing up?
And then
relax. I am relaxed.
Exactly. And then Jeb Bush and Chris Christie at one point were talking to each other and patting each other on the back. You know, so they're so far down in the polls in Iowa, but they both seem to feel like they were doing a good job last night here in the closing days, 4 days before we vote. And then most of the candidates came down into the audience during the commercial breaks. The one person who didn't was John Kasich. He stayed up on stage pacing, and people thought that was kind of a parallel for he's not really engaging in Iowa. He's more focused on New Hampshire.
Come on, Kasich, plunge in there. Kiss some babies. Let's go to Iowa. Waterloo, Iowa. Karen is calling. Karen, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I just want to respond to a couple things. I will be caucusing. I don't know for sure who I'm going to vote for, but a couple things. First and foremost, the man who said that, you know, Bernie's ideas are not going to happen. They're just going to fade because they'll never get past Congress. That's assuming that we're going to have the same Congress. I know staunchly Republican young people still in their 20s who were so staunchly Republican the whole period of time growing up that I knew them, who are now right behind Bernie. I mean, that's the first time I've ever seen this kid change. And I have to say, you know, that's a call out. Look at the way the last 8 years has been. It's clear that the country as a whole is looking for a change. You can see that by who's ahead in the Republican. And So just saying that, to say we're going to have the same Congress, if you do vote for that person who's out there, make certain that you get a Congress and a Senate that also supports your ideas and your views. Because as long as we're divided, we've got a divided Congress from the Senate, nothing gets done or not enough gets done.
Karen, we've got it. You are right on to something there. Whether that enthusiasm for Sanders from some unexpected quarters, you say young Republicans looking that way, that's a sign of some kind of change going on. Whether that really can turn into a different Congress and policy, I don't know. But, Lisa, I mean, we've got Peggy Noonan, conservative, writing in the Wall Street Journal today. Headline, Peggy Noonan in the Journal, Socialism Gets a Second Life. Why do the young love Bernie Sanders? Because their experience of capitalism is different. And she writes this. She says, for so many, 2008, this is for young people, shattered faith in the system, in its fairness, usefulness, and efficacy, even its ability to endure. That's pretty revolutionary talk right there. And that's right from Peggy Noonan, Lisa.
I think that I saw that, too, and I thought that was very insightful into what's happening with Bernie Sanders. I think something else that's happening with Bernie Sanders that we can look at the Republican race to as well is, for some reason, this sort of grumpy, kind of cranky Brooklyn, Vermont guy is really likable. I don't know.
Warming up.
He's off the charts with people liking him. And I think we saw last night in the Republican race, just to pivot back to that really quickly, not that it makes any sense, but is that Ted Cruz may have a likability problem. And
that speaks to what
Jennifer is saying. You know, he comes up, he's all tense to the moderators. He clearly seemed like he'd had back and forth with the moderators before the debate.
Yeah.
And I think that's really now exposed. And we're seeing as much as we and as much as I think your listeners love substantive debates and substantive decisions, we're seeing elections that are based, this election, based so much on just a feel for personality, more than I can remember.
I mean, even with Republicans looking at Ted Cruz, you've got Bob Dole, political reporting this week, maybe the nation's senior Republican, they call him, telling friends he's unhappy about the potential Mike Bloomberg run. Bloomberg saying, you know, if it's Trump and Clinton, he might get in there. But Dole thinking that would just elect Ted Cruz in the end if Bloomberg gets in, and that can Bloomberg would divide moderate voters. And, you know, I don't even Bob Dole can't stomach Ted Cruz. On the Sanders front, likability, I mean, I have to say reputationally, it's more grumpy than likable. But maybe people don't really care. And he has become warmer on the trail. Here he was Monday, town hall hosted by CNN in your town, Jennifer, Des Moines.
So if you're asking me, why is it that our campaign has created the kind of momentum that it has? I think we are touching a nerve with the American people who understand that establishment politics is just not good enough. We need bold changes. We need a political revolution.
Bold changes. Revolution. When did you hear a president call for that? Lauren in Lexington, Kentucky. Lauren, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I wanted to speak up as one of the young women, feminist young women, voting for Bernie Sanders as of right now.
Okay.
Over Hillary. And I wanted to say that part of my reasoning is that as much as I would love to have a woman president right now, yesterday, I would much rather vote for someone that I feel is sick of how women are treated than just a woman in America because she's a woman in America. And I appreciate everything that she has done, but at the moment, Bernie has taken my vote.
You think Bernie Sanders would be stronger for women and women's issues than Hillary Clinton?
Yes. And even if not all of his policies get passed, if one of his policies get passed, I would consider that an absolute victory.
Lauren, you're breaking up on us a little bit, but we've got it. Hillary Clinton sort of taking some hits from Bernie this week, saying, look how she's changed. Look how she's not consistent. But her big phrase of the week is proven fighter, telling people when she's questioned on credibility by a young man in New Hampshire or Des Moines, I guess, that she's been around and she's taken the heat and she'll hang in there. She's the one who'll get things done. Here she is.
I've been around a long time. People have thrown all kinds of things at me. And, you know, I can't keep up with it. I just keep going forward. They fall by the wayside. They come up with these outlandish things. They make these charges. I just keep going forward because there's nothing to it. They throw all this stuff at me, and I'm still standing.
Jennifer Jacobs, you're in Des Moines. Is that a winning message? They come at me, I keep going.
Yes. In fact, after the CNN town hall forum in Des Moines, I had a lot of Democrats email or text me saying, you know what, she's got a really good point there. She's going to have to be facing up against a really tough Republican, they think likely Donald Trump, and they think she can handle anything. There's nothing that's going to make her crumble. So when you talk to Iowa Democrats, they like Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton both very much. It's not that they dislike the other. They love them both. And it's really has come down to this matter of vision versus electability and experience. And so people are just torn between the two of them right now. But when they hear Hillary Clinton saying things like that, they think, oh, you know, that's a very powerful argument. They want somebody who's going to be able to win and be able to handle any crisis. And she makes a good argument that she can.
I mean, powerful in its way, but it also speaks to the fact that there's baggage. It's come again and again and again. Maybe unfair to put that on her, but there it is, Jack. I mean, is it possible, Jack, that Hillary Clinton, after, you know, being the front runner and then having to give way to Barack Obama, could end up her next time out with sort of likability issues or whatever it is and Bernie Sanders out in front of her?
Well, it's possible, but when you dive into the numbers, it makes it seem as if Bernie's boom is factitious. I mean, she's ahead in the register poll by 9 among definite voters. He's ahead by 10 among probable voters. Okay, the young people are for him, but when you look at who votes, it's the seniors. In the general election, 45% of 18 to 29 year olds voted, and against 72% of seniors. He's betting on a group that hasn't voted and that in a caucus has not shown up before. Perhaps it can. It did for Obama. Perhaps it can happen for him.
Bernie's lead is factitious. I'm going to have to go to my Funk and Wagner's for that one, Jack. Pull it up on my dictionary.com. We're looking at a week in the news. All eyes on Iowa. Politics all over. Arrests, a death in Oregon. We'll go right to that. Zika alarm. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
This On Point podcast is made possible by Squarespace. If you have a passion that you obsess over, if it keeps you up at night, if you live for it, you should show it off. With easy-to-use tools and templates, Squarespace websites help you capture every detail of what drives you. Because if it's worth the effort, it's worth showing to the world. Start your free trial today at squarespace.com. When you're ready to purchase, use the one-word offer code ONPOINT to save 10%. You should. Squarespace.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. In other news this week, Barbie will now come in more sizes and skin tones, curvy, petite, tall. Here's Mattel's Evelyn Mazzucco with music from the very first Barbie commercial.
Society felt that a brand like Barbie needs to be more in touch with the times and needs to be a better reflection of the world that girls are living in today.
My Barbie doll is really real.
I don't know if it was ever very real. The Wounded Warrior Project, the big charity, under fire this week for lavish spending on itself. Here's former employee, Army Staff Sergeant Eric Millett.
You're using our injuries, our darkest days, our hardships to make money. So you can have these big parties. Let's get a Mexican mariachi band in there.
Oh, boy. And actor Abe Vigoda has died famed for his role as Salvador Tessio in The Godfather. He betrayed the Corleone family and was knocked off.
No, Mike, it was only business. I always liked him.
He understands that.
Excuse me, Sal.
Tom, can you get me off the hook? For old time's sake.
Can't do it, Sally.
Michael, it was only business. That'll be Trump and Ailes after the campaign. We're looking at a week in the news. All eyes on Iowa. Politics all over. Arrest, death in Oregon. We'll look at that. Zika alarm. You can join us. Do you think the FBI's played the Oregon standoff right? What about Bundy and his crew? Are you taking on board the scale of the potential threat from the Zika virus? Is it freaking you out? And what do you think of the Houston grand jury that turned the tables in the planned Parenthood case? With Lisa Desjardins of the PBS NewsHour, Jennifer Jacobs from the Des Moines Register, Jack Beatty's here. I want to get to Oregon, but still just a couple more. So many calls here on your caucuses and more, Jennifer. Lee in Providence, Rhode Island. Lee, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Okay. What do you see, Lee?
Well, I find that a lot of Bernie Sanders supporters actually have a lot of vitriol for Hillary Clinton supporters as of right now. I myself am a millennial and a staunch Hillary Clinton supporter. I just don't think that Bernie Sanders has the record to really do what's necessary in this country right now. You know, Hillary Clinton, people say that she's not likable, but I actually think that's a wonderful quality. You know, she has a lot of integrity and she's really not afraid to stand up for, you know, policies and on the foreign policy front for what she really thinks is the right thing to do. And
why do you think Sanders is still in front of her by a pretty good margin in New Hampshire, Lee?
Honestly, it's the rhetoric is a huge part of it to me. You know,
hers or his?
Oh, his, for sure. Mm-hmm. Because for him, you know, he's saying a lot of things that people really want to hear.
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, political revolution, especially, you know, New Hampshire is the live free or die state,
yeah,
of course. And
yeah,
so people who are up there, if they're Republican, they tend to be very Republican. And if they're Democrat or liberal, they tend to be very Democrat or liberal. And I think that, you know, Bernie is not, he's not a moderate political figure. You know?
And this year, maybe that's there's a lot of favor for that. Lee, we got it. You're staunch millennial woman, staunch for Hillary. Let me thank you, Lee. Dwayne in Cedar Rapids, you're on.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I just wanted to make a point. The last caller had indicated that she thought Hillary had integrity, and my feeling is that with her vote on the Iraq war, when it was fairly apparent that the Republicans were trumping up a bunch of the evidence, that she really has no integrity. And I will be caucusing for Bernie Sanders on Monday night.
All right, Dwayne. We've got it. It's just I think enough said on the political front. The caucus is so close and the voting is so close, and we will see exactly what people want, at least in those two states, very particular states, as Lee points out, from Rhode Island, but powerful states right now in this election cycle. I want to go in turn, if I may, to the whole situation in Oregon. We've got calls on that as well, and I'll come to them. Of course, we saw the arrests this week, Ammon Bundy and more, and the killing of Lavoie Finicum there on the highway, Snowy Highway, and eyewitnesses with different versions of what happened at that traffic stop, as it was called. I've seen the video. You've got a bunch of law enforcement calls blocking the way, snow on either side. Lavoie tries to drive around. And here's Victoria Sharp, 18-year-old, was in the same car as Robert Lavoie Finicum on the day he was shot in the militia standoff there, militant standoff, shared her story on social media this Tuesday.
He got out of the car, and he had his hands in the air. He's like, just shoot me then. This is what you want, just shoot me. And they did. They shot him dead. They shot him like right there because he was just walking with his hands in the air, and I thought, I swear to God.
A lot of versions out there, and of course, they're very political. Some, he's hands up on his knees. Here's Mark McDonald, a protester driving one of two cars involved in that altercation where Finicum was shot, gave his version of events in a video posted to Facebook on Wednesday.
He was not on his knees. He was none of that nonsense. But he went after him. He charged him. You know, Lavoie was very passionate about what he was doing up here.
He charged them, not on his knees, passionate. And then last night, the FBI released this video of the confrontation from the air between Oregon State Police and occupier or militant Robert Lavoie Finicum. Here's FBI agent Greg Bretzing, special agent in charge of the FBI field office in Portland, Oregon, narrating that video, describing why the confrontation, he says, resulted in Finicum's death.
On at least two occasions, Finicum reaches his right hand toward a pocket on the left inside portion of his jacket. He did have a loaded 9mm semi-automatic handgun in that pocket. At this time, OSP troopers shot Finicum.
Okay, eventually we're going to step back from this video and this shooting because there's a bigger picture here, but this is right at the heart of it, and it's hot. Carter's calling from Nashville, Tennessee. Carter, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
Okay.
Good. So my question for you, and I guess other listeners, if they want to weigh in on it, and I'm not a supporter of the movement in Oregon and the occupation of that wildlife refuge, but if the FBI agents fired on the car when it attempted to run their roadblock, I think that's a legitimate use of force. I don't think anybody really questions that. But watching that video, unfortunately without any audio, is hard to say, but it looks to me like I see muzzle flashes before Lavoie's hands ever moved down above his shoulders. So that would indicate that after he exited the vehicle, was no longer using that vehicle as a threat, that he was shot while not actually posing a physical threat. I mean, he may have been saying, just shoot me then.
Carter, stand by for a second. We have this video up at our website. You can check it out. It's quite a compelling thing. You see white SUV heading along a highway with nothing but snow and pine trees, just as far as the eye can see. And then it zeroes in as it approaches, I forget at the moment if it's three or four or five law enforcement vehicles that are blocking the road, snow piled high on the other side. The SUV attempts to drive through that snow and around them, but the snow's too deep, it appears. You can't tell if they fire on the SUV. There's no evidence I can see. There's no soundtrack here. Finicum gets out of his vehicle, and his hands are in the air. You got law enforcement officials approaching him from a couple of angles. Then there's a moment where his hands do go down to his coat, but without a soundtrack, for me anyway, it was hard to know whether they were going down to reach for a gun, as the FBI guy says in his jacket, he had a 9mm pistol, or he was shot and they were going down to try and comfort his torso. I don't know, Jennifer, Lisa, Jack, has anybody else watched it? I watched it with great interest. It's compelling.
Yes, it's Lisa. I also found it to be very compelling, and it hits on so many themes that have really bubbled to the surface this year. Themes of authority, themes of government, themes of how standoffs are handled. It even kind of speaks. I've seen a lot of very interesting conversations about how the FBI handled this situation versus how some police handle situations with African Americans and Black Lives Matters, kind of raising those sorts of topics. I think, honestly, it's impossible to tell from that video the exact timing. I see what the caller, Carter, was saying, but I think at this point it's impossible for us to know if he put his hand on his gun in his pocket or not. To me, I have spent more time talking about the bigger issue or thinking about the bigger issues here. We had a plot of land managed by the federal government, owned by the federal government for many decades, and there was a question here that the townspeople agreed with over giving those who lease that land, those who work that land, more ability to do what they want. At the same time, this is a piece of land that is very important for migratory birds, and that's something the federal government's thinking about. But I think this is an extreme example of what we're seeing, honestly, in the presidential race. It's not a hard turn to make, that this is all about people not trusting government, people having problems with government's role in their life. Certainly in the conservative kind of rural areas, they are standing up. And this is a more extreme end of that. But this is a bigger conversation that I think the country's having.
I mean, talk about revolution. It is also a challenge to the very credibility of the government at some level, and very mixed opinions on that. Boy, they got some great names that come out of this territory, though. Lavoie Finicum and Cliven Bundy. Jack, I want to get your view on this, and you too, Jennifer, but more calls. Caller here from Portland, Oregon. Paul, you're on the air. What do you think?
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I want to say the local OPB radio station has been incredible in giving us insight into what's going on there. And you can't
Good.
Just look at that video and have and know the detail about, especially about this guy, Lavoie. He was, I think, a pretty amazing guy, but a pretty misguided soul. And I think he had a death wish. And if you listen to any of the videos of him on YouTube, you'll hear that he wanted to die.
There was a more than a whiff of that out there. What do you think about the whole standoff, Paul? Where do you come down? Do you see some just complaint in Ammon Bundy's crew, or just kind of out of line?
I think that we don't know enough from the video that was shown from the drone. That was a drone following that.
That's kind of freaky, too. But I don't mean the vehicle confrontation. I mean the whole confrontation, moving in there and saying, we want access to this federal land. Are you sympathetic to that, or are they just breaking the law? And this, you know, if it was some black guys in Cleveland, boom, boom, I think this would have been over.
You're right about that. It would have been over way sooner if it was anybody else. But what people have to realize is this country that these fellas are trying to say is theirs belongs to everybody, and it is not. It's not great cattle country. This is high desert. It's much better to leave it for the people who want to go and watch the birds in the springtime. I go there every spring, and that's what we do.
Paul, we've got it. I so much appreciate your call from Oregon. One more on this, and we got to get to Zika. But Bob in Tahlequah, Oklahoma. Bob, you're on the air.
Yes, sir. The thing about it is, to the previous caller, there's no reason to shoot the man. Okay, well, with everything you're saying. Okay with everything you're saying to the previous caller and all the other. There's no reason to shoot the man.
Well,
is this what we've come to in society, that just because somebody might have what they call a death wish or a Jesus complex or what have you, that somebody has to rise to the occasion with a badge on and gun them down?
Listen, I'm for that, but let me ask you, I'm for that. I wish it could have, if they had to shoot, why shoot to kill? But if he was reaching into his jacket and
didn't produce it.
It doesn't have
reaching.
To.
Did it produce it? How quick a draw are you?
Well, I have no idea, but I take your point. No reason to shoot the man here. Boy, Jennifer, I don't know if you've got an opinion on this, but stand back at this whole confrontation, and where do your sympathies lie, or what do you make, I guess, of the sympathies running through this whole mural?
We just hear a lot about this on conservative talk radio in Iowa. Just this morning, one of our radio stations was going over this in depth. And what I can say is it just generates a lot of passion. You're exactly right about how it's an issue in the presidential campaign. It's very much an issue for voters on the ground, and it colors the way they think about how they're going to vote in this presidential election.
That's as far as we're going to get on Oregon today. We're sorry for the death there. We hope it all works out. We got the sheriff out there. You can see the emotion in his face saying, come on, it's time for this to end. Let me go to Gary in Austin, Texas. Interesting territory these days with all the talk about Zika virus, the South. Gary, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Well, I'm from the Rio Grande Valley, and I still spend a lot of time down there, and my family ranch is down that way. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering about the vector, the mosquito for Zika. There's lots of dengue immediately across the river in Reynosa and Brownsville. Very little in the lower Rio Grande Valley. And the health officials down there tell us that it's because the mosquito is so delicate and such a small range mosquito that it can't make it across the river, even with a 20 mile an hour south breeze blowing.
Wow.
I don't know if I buy that.
Yeah.
But I was wondering if this is the same mosquito, and maybe we might be able to stop it at the river, which we have stopped dengue at the river.
It is the same mosquito, but let me ask you, if you had a pregnant wife, would you sit with her at the other side of the river and trust that no Aedes mosquito is going to make it across?
Not without a lot of DEET.
Me either. Me either. I mean, here's Margaret Chan with the World Health Organization talking about just how worried people are.
The level of alarm is extremely high. Arrival of the virus in some places has been associated with a steep increase in the birth of babies with abnormally small heads.
Explosive growth across Latin America now. Anthony Fauci, who's big with American public health, saying we can control it here. Lisa Desjardins, are you believing that?
You know, this is the scary thing. And I think having many friends who are pregnant right now, you know, we're in Washington, D.C. It feels like we're far away, but suddenly it doesn't feel so far away.
Mm-hmm.
I sort of was feeling that. How do I look at this? Until this morning, you know, I was hearing from Anthony Fauci of the CDC. I saw him on CNN this morning and think they make a good point that we have much better ways of controlling mosquito populations here in the United States than you see, especially in those rural areas of Brazil that are the hot spots for this disease. And
well,
I do
so
think
how much
that
do you want to lay down?
Right?
You know?
Well, I think it's a question of now people have to be more vigilant of making sure you don't have standing water. Make sure that if you've got a bird bath or any bowl outside, make sure that you turn it over. You don't want standing water in your yard. I do think they made a good case, and it did make me feel some degree better. But that said, no way am I traveling or my friends traveling to Brazil at this point.
And these mosquitoes bite in the daytime. So, yes, we have screens in our windows, but do you want to stay behind them all day long? That doesn't sound too great, Jack.
Oh, my gosh. There's so much to be afraid of out there.
Okay. We'll calm down the fear still. I'm not taking any pregnant friends to Latin America anytime soon, and maybe you don't want to either. Lisa Desjardins with the PBS NewsHour, great to have you. Thank you so much for being with us today.
My pleasure.
Jennifer Jacobs, chief political reporter with the Des Moines Register. We'll be watching you in the thick of it next week. Jennifer, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
And Jack, thank you as always.
Thank you.
Listeners, have a great weekend. Thanks for being here. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.